Welcome to Faith on Fitness. My name is Faith Ritter, and I'm the Communications Director here at Benefit Personal Training. We are an in-home personal fitness training company dedicated to helping mature clients stay strong, fit, and healthy today and throughout their entire lives. And we're here with Dr. Paul Randolph, who is the founder and executive director of Insight Christian Counseling with over 30 years of counseling experience. He also serves as the chaplain for the United States Secret Service and the Pennsylvania State Police. Welcome, Dr. Paul. We're so honored to have you here with us today.
Well, it's great to be with you, Faith, and I'm excited to have this opportunity to interact with you and hopefully engage your listeners in some things that will be helpful to them, particularly as we get to the start of a new year. And boy, I think everybody can't wait for 2021.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I am so eager to close the books on 2020 and say hello to 2021 because it's been a rough year. It's been a rough year, so I think everyone's waiting to exhale and get a new start.
Get Amen. A new start. I'm with you, girl. That's for
Yes. So I'm sure over the next few weeks, you know, many of us will at least give some thought to coming up with some goals for 2021, and then some of us will go the next step, you know, to actually write our goals down, which all the experts say is advisable because it increases the likelihood for success. But we all know coming up with goals and writing them down, while it may be necessary, it certainly isn't sufficient. Would you agree with that, Dr. Paul?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's not sufficient.
That's a great first step, getting it down on paper, absolutely. But you need more than just that, for sure.
Exactly, because the stats bear that out. You know, according to a University of Scranton study, only 8% of us will actually realize our resolutions next year. So that's not too encouraging, is it, Dr. Paul?
No, it's not.
But I know you come bearing some glad tidings today, right? So we're hopeful that you'll be able to shed some light on this topic and share some practical strategies that will help set our listeners up for success. So let's just jump right on in. So, So change, right? It's so easy to get started, isn't it, Dr. Paul? So easy to get started. It's so hard to stay on track. So why is change so fleeting for so many of us? Why is it so temporary? And then share with us, just from your experience as a counselor, what separates those people who are able to make long-term meaningful change from those who are not?
Well, that's a great couple of questions, Faith. And in my experience and working with folks, and even in my own personal life, I think one of the reasons why change is often so temporary is it takes a good 6 to 8 weeks to establish a new positive habit in your life.
Okay.
And it doesn't take long or much of anything to continue with the bad habits that we fall into to just having as a part of our experience. So, for example, anybody who works out at the gym will tell you that you got to keep up with it, you know, and you got to keep going to the gym, because if you stop going, you will lose what you gained much faster than it took you to put the effort into gaining.
Right.
I think that's a factor right there. We are inherently lazy. We're going to always look for the easiest route.
Okay.
To get from point A to point B. And I'm guilty of that too. I also think that most people, when they start out, are sincere in wanting to make a change for the better, whether it's losing weight, having a better marriage, becoming more physically fit, being less of a slob. I think where people get into trouble following through and making lasting change is when they only focus on changing their actions instead of also seeking to make changes to who they are as a person. For example, The out-of-shape person starts out with their New Year's resolution to work out at the gym. And over those next couple of weeks, they show up regularly and, you know, they're putting some time in, even with some of those aches and pains they're experiencing. You know, they're excited to have maybe a trainer working with them. And particularly if the trainer is particularly good looking, you know, I mean, you know, it's like, wow, I can't wait to see Veronica at the gym. She's going to help me get to be a stronger guy.
Right.
But over time, we start to lose steam. You know, it takes effort. And then Veronica keeps pushing me to do a little bit more and work a little bit harder. And dear Veronica eventually turns into Darth Vader in my mind. And I'm like, you know, oh, I can't deal with this anymore. And I think what they missed was, okay, yes, we got to focus on what exercises I'm going to do and what changes I'm going to make to my diet. But they failed to address the importance of making some changes in the inner person. And that change involves addressing one or more of the personal characteristics, the inner qualities that they may have. Maybe they have a tendency toward laziness, which I think is true of all of us. Maybe
right.
they lack self-control, self-discipline, determination. And I think those who succeed in lasting change not only make action goals, they also say, let me look within myself to see what I need to change about me to give me more staying power to stick with whatever goals I'm setting, whether it's physical gym goals or any kind of goal. So that's kind of my perspective when I think why change is often temporary.
Wow, that was so insightful. I hope everyone caught that. You could write a book just on that, Dr. Paul.
Oh, my word.
You could write a book just on that.
yes, you could. Absolutely, absolutely.
So listen, so all of the experts talk about the power of why, right? If your why mm-hmm. is big enough, they say, I can hear Tony Robbins talking as I speak. If your why is big enough, you can accomplish anything. So do you believe that, number one? And then how can our listeners hone in on those motivators that will actually help to propel them forward?
Well, yes, I would say that the why factor is certainly an important piece of this. You know, motivation
right.
can really make the difference. And I think especially in getting us to overcome the inertia of mm-hmm. wanting to stay comfortable where I'm at. You know, we all like our comfort zones. And if you have proper motivation, it mm-hmm. can propel you to move out of being stuck where you're at. For example, after 9/11 and the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, many people left their comfort zone and actually joined the military or became a first responder. Now, that's a huge change for a lot of people.
Wow. Okay.
Why did they do that? I think it was that they were motivated, at least with first responders that I talked to who joined after 9/11 and military folks, they uh-huh. said, I was motivated by what I saw happening that day. And the motivation was to either get back at those who attacked us, love for their country,
right.
or seeing some of the selfless acts of the police officers and firefighters and EMTs that day who ran in as others were running out. And we had many inspiring stories of people who gave their lives helping others to escape the danger. That's powerfully motivating.
Sure.
I think in sports, you see the same thing, where you can have the well-motivated team often winning the day,
mm-hmm.
even when faced with an opponent, which on paper
right.
should be the winner.
Right.
For example, I think of when the Eagles beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
On paper, the Patriots should have won. They had
sure.
the experience of many Super Bowl wins. They had more players with more established records and better stats than the Eagles team. But yet the Patriots lost and the Eagles won. And I think one of the factors in the Eagles' win was their team concept
okay.
and their motivation to want to, let's together bring it home for our fans, for our city, and for ourselves. And even that for ourselves was an unselfish thing because different players got injured and they had that concept of the next man up.
The
next guy up. And so there was this motivation of the team concept. So I think motivation is key. And I guess the question is, how do we hone in on the best motivators? And I would suggest that this depends on the values and personality of the individual person. I think if your listeners can try to find motivators which are more in line with what matters to them.
Right.
For example, family is very important to me, as it is to many people. So anything that enhances my family life is a great motivator to me. So, for example, when it comes to weight loss or exercise, I don't like to do either of them, to be honest with you.
That's honest.
I am. In fact, when I had to have abdominal surgery many years ago, I said to the surgeon, I said, look, while you open me up and you have the hood open, could you give me a six-pack? I've always wanted six-pack abs. Could you do that for me, doc? Could you reduce this for me and make it a six-pack? He said.
And what did he say?
He said, Reverend, I'm a surgeon. I am not a miracle worker.
I am not Jesus.
So, sorry. So, I have a gallon jug, but at least it's not a five-gallon jug.
Right.
Who likes exercise or weight loss? It's a challenge. It's work. Now, it's an important payoff to it. But here's the motivator for me as to why I'm willing to exercise and to watch what I eat. Because I want to be around for as long as possible as a husband, as a dad, and especially now as a grandpa.
Awesome.
And so that's a great motivator for me. I don't want to die prematurely because I didn't take care of myself.
Right.
So
right.
I took a motivator that matters to me, and because I'm not going to be on the cover of GQ magazine anytime. You know, that doesn't motivate me. But wanting to be around for my grandkids, absolutely.
Great.
You know, if you, and even if you can also, you know, that's like a big, big scale motivator. Mm-hmm. I think for your listeners, maybe also putting into play a couple of more immediate motivators can also help that relate again to their personality, their preferences. For example, if anything that is chocolate will motivate me. I mean, that's a great little reward motivator for me. Now, of course, in moderation, but vanilla isn't going to cut it. Chocolate will. That's just knowing myself and knowing what's going to motivate me. So maybe at the end of the week, giving myself, you know, a little reward with something chocolate that doesn't go overboard. Okay, that helps me stay on track. That helps me want to do the grind of walking and exercising, which I try to do, regularly as in the course of my day. So that's my thought on motivation. Yes, it's a huge factor. And I think if you can find things that line up with your personality and the things that you value, that's going to help you have more meaningful motivators that will propel you further down the road.
Awesome. That's perfect, Doctor. That's perfect. So you spoke about this earlier, but just want you to touch on it a little bit further. So change often requires us to abandon old habits and ways of thinking and adopt new ones, right?
Yes.
But you spoke to this earlier. But the problem is that we often take comfort, right, and the behaviors that we need to change, and we often fear or resist the very things that we need to integrate into our lives. So how do we overcome that challenge?
And I think you're touching on something that, again, is experienced by pretty much everybody.
Right.
You know, we all have those things that we derive comfort from. And I think the idea of putting off something negative while putting on something positive can be a real difference maker for the lasting change that folks are looking to do. So, mm-hmm. for example, over the years, I've worked with a lot of people who struggle with some form of addiction, whether it's to alcohol, to overeating, to shopping, to gambling, to pornography, just to name a few.
Okay.
And even though they know it's not healthy for them or it's wrong for them, they enjoy it. They like the high that comes from it. They like, you know, it's like an old friend. It's like a comfortable pair of jeans.
Yeah.
That they like putting on. I can recall one fellow that I worked with who was a functional alcoholic, meaning he was able to hold a job, provide for his family, and you really wouldn't notice that he had a drinking problem unless you were with him on the weekends, because that's when he would choose to get hammered.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were around him on the weekends, you'd see like, whoa, this is a different person here. And as it began to impact negatively on his marriage and with his children, his wife turned to our organization for help. And I think a couple things helped him get past that unwillingness to let go of the negative. One was, first of all, getting the blinders taken off to the negative impact. He was telling himself, as everyone who struggles with alcohol,
right.
Oh, I can stop anytime I want. This really isn't hurting anybody.
Right.
All those negative self-talk blinders that we have. And so I told his wife, I said, don't clean up after him when he throws up and passes out on the floor. Let him stay there.
Wow.
Let him begin to see that. And as that began to happen, for example, he began to realize that, whoa, this isn't something that I want to continue. And realizing that his spouse was getting to a place where she was actually starting to consider divorce.
Mm-hmm.
As he began to see the negative impact, I think that was one of the keys that helped him realize, you know what, I got to put this off. But then I also have to put on something new.
Sure.
And the new that he began to put on was saying, okay, I'm going to get some counseling for the personal issues that are leading me to drink, the anxiety and the worry and the stress that I'm dealing with. So that was the first put on. The second put on was, I'm going to look for other ways to interact with my wife and my family on the weekends that will have a positive impact. So I think it's very wise. And in fact, coming where I am from a Christian counseling perspective, you know, when you look in the scriptures, it talks about the putting off and the putting on.
Right.
And real change involves when you do both. Now, that takes determination.
Sure does.
There's no getting around that. But again, if you can find a motivator that is something that you value, which in this case was this man's family. He did not want to lose them. That's what was actually the thing that propelled him to say, okay, I need to get some help here, and I got to take these blinders off.
Wow. And then, of course, he enlisted the support that he needed, because change of that magnitude often requires some reinforcements, does it not, Doctor?
Oh, yeah. You are speaking truth now, girl. Absolutely.
So we all like to believe, as I'm sure this gentleman believed, that he could do it on his own, that he could marshal the internal fortitude to make that change. But he finally came to the conclusion that he needed some help. So why is asking for help so hard? Why is it so difficult for us to ask for help when we need it?
It comes down to one word, pride.
Pride. Yep.
We are too proud often to ask for help, because asking for help means you've got to be vulnerable. You need to have a certain amount of humility to say, I can't do this on my own. Now, this can take some different forms. I've heard people say, well, I don't want to be a burden to other people. Well, if they're your family, that's what family's about, supporting one another, caring for one another, helping for one another. Or if you are in a church or a synagogue or a mosque, you know, you're part of a congregation of people. And again, that's, you know, I like to say the church is not a place, it's not a museum for perfect people. It's a hospital for imperfect people.
Right.
And so this idea, I don't want to be a burden, it's just another form of pride. Or I don't want to look weak. I don't want people to think less of me. Well, again, there it is, pride.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
There in front of us. And I think that's the key thing that makes it difficult to ask for help. We need to realize that, you know, pride simply leads to more digging in your heels and being stubborn and saying, no, I can do this on my own. And again, what I think will help people get past the pride is when they begin to realize the cost that is coming from their staying where they're at and not being willing to take some initiative to bring about some change.
Very good. Very good. So the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, Dr. Paul, is the past. You know, I strongly believe that the biggest enemy of the future is the past, right? So,
yep.
You know, it often holds us back, our past disappointments, our past, oh, I tried, it didn't work. You know, those past failures kind of play over in our head, and it really holds us back from realizing the future that we want to create for ourselves. So how have you helped your clients to overcome that tendency to want to look back?
Yeah, I would say a couple things that I have found to be helpful in working with others and in my own personal life is,
right,
first of all, realizing that you cannot change the past.
Mm-hmm.
You can only change the present and plan for your future.
Okay.
You cannot, and just realizing that. Second of all, I think the guilt factor has to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, coming from a Christian perspective, I think the Bible provides tremendous help when it comes to dealing with the issue of guilt. I would say, you've got to come to a place where guilt no longer holds you back and traps you. It's interesting. My wife is a nurse, and she used to work at a hospital in Philadelphia that had a psych department, and the head psychiatrist for the hospital drove a very fancy car. I don't remember whether it was a Mercedes-Benz or a BMW,
right,
or a Ferrari, but whatever he was driving, he had a one-word vanity license plate on his car, and the word was guilt.
Huh.
Guilt was the word on his license plate. And one day my wife asked him, hey, Doc, how come you have the word guilt on your license plate? And he said, you know, I figured one day you would get around to asking me this, because I know you're married to a pastor, and pastors,
right,
do a lot to help people deal with guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, here's the reason why guilt is on my license plate. It's because over 90% of the people who come to me for help are dealing with struggles in their past and the guilt that they have for decisions that they've made in the past. And I figured, since guilt is what's really driving my practice and helps me to afford to pay for the car,
oh my
I
goodness.
Ought to give guilt the credit. But I thought that was a very
wow. Deep.
That was a,
yes.
That was an eye-opening admission by a very successful psychiatrist that,
right,
guilt is what drove most of the people to come to see him for help. Now, you can try to drug guilt away. I don't really think that's the most effective way to deal with it. But certainly seeking to get past that guilt factor that hangs over you, I think is key. I also think of a scripture in the Bible that says, forgetting what lays behind, I press forward to the mark that God has set for me. And I love that perspective. Now, there's certain things that you can't forget from your past. I get that. And you know, at least from a Christian perspective, the Bible doesn't ever teach that we are to forgive and forget. The only person that, the only one that does that is God.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
We are called to forgive. I mean, there are some people that have hurt me in my past. I will never forget what they've done to me, but that doesn't mean I can't forgive them and move on.
Right.
And the sincerity of my forgiveness isn't that I have forgotten. The sincerity is I'm not going to tell you who they were and what they did to me.
Yep.
And if I run into them on the street, I'm not going to punch them in the nose.
You might want to, but you're not.
I might want to, yes, but I'm not going to do that.
Right.
And that,
right,
to me, right, is a mark of sincerity. So,
sure.
I think the other thing that I think may help your listeners with the whole guilt and forgetting the past piece,
right,
is, again, purposely taking that moment of guilt and shame, mm-hmm, and using that to motivate you to do a better job. And I'm going to give you an example from my own life. I am a chaplain also for a local fire department, and there's not many of us around. And I was asked by another fire company to do an official funeral for one of their firefighters.
Yeah.
Who had been retired, and I agreed to do that and help the family. And when I got up to give them the funeral message, mm-hmm, I did the kiss of death as any minister in a funeral setting, and there's no pun intended on that one. I used the wrong name for the man who had died.
No, you did not, Dr. Paul.
OMG.
Oh my.
And let me tell you, thankfully, the widow was very gracious and understanding, and I actually got a little laugh out of it. But I was so embarrassed. Every time I drive by that firehouse, even today, I think of that moment. And I'm like, oh, how stupid could I be to have done that? How embarrassing in front of a whole group of people.
Right.
But what I do is I don't wallow in that self-pity and guilt. I just say, you know what? I just have to do a better job going forward, and for the next funeral or the next service or the next situation I'm called to minister in, I just got to do a better job.
Right, right.
You know, because I don't want to repeat that.
Very good. So
it's not
actually
what I want to do.
Yeah. So in a way, you flipped it, and you had a negative situation. Now it's serving as a positive force in your life.
Exactly. I'm using it to be a motivator to,
yeah,
not go back there again.
Very good.
And I still cringe when I think about that moment.
Let it go, Dr. Paul. Let it go. Let it go.
I have. But I wanted to share it with your folks because I think we need to be real here. Just because I have,
yeah,
doctor as a title.
Sure. You have your own struggles.
My pants go on one leg at a time, just like everybody else's.
Well, I so appreciate your transparency. I think that gives what you do even more power, mm-hmm, when you're transparent.
Thank you.
And
Thank
open.
You. Yes.
I really do. So, Dr. Paul, you covered a lot of ground over a short period of time. So can you just recap? I know it's a lot, but do your best to kind of recap. If the listeners don't remember anything else, what are the three things you want them to come away with today?
I think if you want lasting change,
yeah,
you need to address not only the situational aspects of what's going on, but you also need to look at bringing about change in the inner person, who,
okay,
you are. So that will give your change more staying power. Secondly, I think,
okay,
you want to look for ways to find motivators that address your own personality and the values of things that are important to you.
Sure.
And I think that provides your best motivators. And then I think we need to get past, thirdly, both our pride that makes us reluctant to ask for help.
Right.
As well as we need to get past our past.
Mm.
Guilt that weighs us down. It's like an anchor that's pulling on your boat, and you want to get from point A to point B, and letting go of those guilt anchors.
Mm.
Free your vessel up to be able to move more smoothly through the water to get to the place where you want to be.
The guilt anchors. Wow, I've never heard of that expression, but it's so well encapsulates, it so well communicates what it is. It really does. It keeps you right where you are.
Yep.
It drives you right where you are.
Yep.
Yes. Yep. So Dr. Paul, share with the listeners how they can get in touch with you if they want to talk with you directly.
Yes, we can be reached both by email and by phone.
Okay.
By phone, our counseling line is 215-947-6465. Again, that's 215-947-6465. They can also go to our website, insightcouncil.org, insightcouncil.org. And go to the Contact Now tab that's on every page of our website, and they can email us that way, and we'd be more than happy to set up a time to engage with folks. Right now, with COVID, most of our counseling is virtual,
mm-hmm.
and we use every platform that you can think of. So whatever people are comfortable with, phones, Zoom, Skype, FaceTime, you name it, we're using it. We do have some limited in-person hours.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple counselors who have actually had COVID and recovered.
Wonderful.
And we're following all the safety precautions when we do meet with folks in person. So
perfect.
We can accommodate folks in many different ways.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Paul, I cannot thank you enough for being my guest. I hope that the listeners, they catch it, embrace it, and apply it, because I believe if they do, that they will have a breakthrough year in 2021. That's certainly my hope and prayer for all of our clients,
yes,
all of our friends and family. So happy New Year to you and your family, Dr. Paul, and thank you so much again for being with me today.
My pleasure, and thanks so much for having me on today.
Wonderful. You have a great day.